Hello and welcome to Target Zero Hunger, a podcast that explores the food challenges and solutions of our time. Brought to you by the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. I'm your host, Sandra Ferrari.
The chairman sent me to say this is just a welcoming ceremony. So it's just to welcome you to feel this authentic culture. And thanks very much for coming. And on behalf of this community, you are welcome, Ngaresero.
In this podcast, we're visiting the community of Ngaresero, near the border of Kenya and Tanzania, under the shadow of Mount Kilimanjaro, where a rare type of flamingo breeds and where cattle is at the heart of life. Near here as well, there's a treasure so remarkable that people from all over the world come here to see it. But more on that later. According to Maasai oral history, for centuries, these semi-nomadic tribes of East Africa have migrated and herded their cattle through the majestic lands of southern Kenya and northern Tanzania. On the northern Tanzanian side, which we'll focus on in this podcast, there are millions of miles of Maasai-frequented territory. You can find natural wonders there, such as Lake Natron, as well as the vast Serengeti lands where herds of wildlife like deer, lions, and wildebeests are known to thunder across the lands as they migrate in search of food. The Maasai have shared the territories in this region alongside the native wildlife, sustaining themselves mainly off the cattle that they rear. Cattle are at the core of Maasai cuisine, culture, lifestyle, and their relationship with the environment. As Maasai tribes have evolved, along with the landscape of the region, Maasai traditions continue to be anchored in agropastoralism, which has been reinforced by their ability to cultivate within these difficult arid dried lands. But with Tanzania's growing population, economic expansion, restructured land use, and the pressures of climate change on natural resources, modernity and the country's growth have presented challenges for the Maasai people, growth that threatens their ability to sustain themselves. 5 years ago, the Ngaresero Maasai village was designated a globally important agricultural heritage site for this reason. The goal was to develop sustainable initiatives to support the local community under this new designation. Now that the development phase of these initiatives has ended, FAO officers and delegates from 20 countries around the world recently visited the Kasongo clan of the Maasai communities in Ngaresero to see the results. FAO officers Clelia Maria Puzzo, Shosho Wang, and Orly Fernandez took some recorders with them to walk us through some of what they learned from the Kasongo clan and the tribe's project partners. The area of Ngaresero covers just over 100,000 kilometers squared. This GIAHS, or GS site, as you'll hear it being referred to, is home to some 5,000 people. The concept of a globally important agricultural heritage system is distinct from and more complex than a conventional heritage site or protected landscape. A GIAHS site is a living, evolving system of people and communities who have an intricate relationship with their lands. In the sites that have been designated, they're home to people who, through their livelihood activities, have continually adapted to the potential and constraints of the environment. Naturally, these symbiotic relationships between the people and their environment means that there has been an accumulation of experience over generations. A GIAHS designation is part of a program that brings communities together with their governments and other stakeholders to agree on promoting and conserving the area while, at the same time, allowing it to evolve. Ngaresero matched the criteria and so was designated a globally important site. But while these attributes of the land have been identified, a number of evolving policies still marginalize the people and their practices. With the GS project, examples of initiatives include seedlings distributed to boost crop growth, building a dam to collect rainwater, reinforce traditional drainage systems, develop aquaculture systems. The GS site also integrates tourism in a way that helps the Maasai to generate income and helps them manage foreign visits to their lands in a way that protects their culture as well as their ecosystems. Community-based organizations were also established through GS. They're called CBOs for short, And these CBOs are at the core of all GS activities and create a structure for things like protecting or managing resources. Some other activities include contributing to the improvement of the health system in the village, and a milk production house run by Maasai women, which was also partially funded by the CBO. The chairman of the village, Yahan Leser, explains through his translator and Maasai focal point at Pakwa Sikore.
Na era ne jalongani amana yeni radio yaba yo CBO kanyo donte na ibe ngorunija ora ba CBO ni gi araba na mara na jene GS na njabo yeruesho yoga na ba na ba kirenga na sabu ba ga bulu CBO na la lari rara rara mara ore kona seri na ara sa CBO iwi yo yabo ngene radio CBO anga ina la lazima ibono ko lomana me yela jo iri uri aba lagira la nyo iri renga ni yo.
So the chairman explaining that we know that the CBO has objective, but when they collected some fund, they extended their arms, their power to help different sustainable projects in the village. So the chairman is going to welcome the Secretary of Women to give a little bit word to explain to you what is really happening. Sophia. So she is called Sophia Ndaka. She is a secretary of this women milk chain. This milk chain, they started 2005. The village government, they give them like 2 million Tanzania money just to start. That money helped them to do some administrative thing, including opening the bank account. So the Nkaraisero CBO, the community-based organization, they also support by giving 2 million to help the women milk chain to operate. She said that you cannot find now milk, but the intention is for milk processing. So we will go to see something around the house. They have some milk and then they have some other things. So we can just go around and see it.
One side will go and then another side will come out.
The secretary of the milk chain goes on to explain some of the activities they have. Essentially, they buy milk from the livestock keepers and bring it here for processing. They have 30 employees for these dairy products, and once they can start processing more milk, they'll be able to employ more local women.
Okay, so they take milk from different, you know, women group in the village. So they sell around the small town of Nkaraisero, let's say $2.
Ah, okay.
They will have a lot of milk.
Next stop for the delegates was to learn more about the area's ecosystem.
This is another place. This is Lake Nakro. You can see the mountain far away there. It is a border of Tanzania and Kenya. This side in Tanzania and the other side is in Kenya, which is called Shombole Mountain. This lake is a very global significance, very famous lake as a breeding site for flamingo. So the flamingo in East African region, they migrate and they come to breed here in Lake Natron. They move from Lake Nakuru in Kenya, Lake Manyara in Tanzania and elsewhere, and they come to breed in this Lake Natron. It's very successful because of the following factors. The lake is very shallow, so it allows this flamingo to feed freely. And also there is the availability of food, which is a microscopic blue-green algae. But also this lake is free from predator, and that's why they breed successfully. So as I said, Nkaraisero not only important in livestock or pastoralism, but also is important in ecotourism. So the village, we always receive visitors because they're interested to come and see this famous lake and also the active mountain you can see there. So it's very significant in also ecotourism. The place we have passed when we was coming is a grazing pasture during the dry season. This is the whole place of the village. It goes to the near to the mountain is the whole entire grazing season. But I will welcome Marco to speak about pastoralism and a bit about the grazing pasture.
But very briefly, just for you practical to understand, look at this village. you know, this is escarpment. You see this escarpment, and then you see this plain from the lake all the way to Oldenyo Lengai, to the mountain. This is the lower land of the village. Up escarpment, like that mountain, okay, there is another big, nice plateau, okay? So the system works like this of pastoralism. Normally, when it rains, the cattle come down the slope in many other areas. But in Nyangaresero, it's the inverse, okay? So that question that if the pastures is enough during the drought and wet season, is that what you're asking? Yeah.
Kwetu sisi kwa hiyo population imetaja inatusheleza kabisa.
So for them, for the current population and the way they manage it is enough.
Lakini umetokea na mabadiliko ya tabia nchi.
But there is a lot of climate change these days.
Kwa mfano kwenye kiangazi hii, sasa hivi ni kiangazi kikubwa tu, imetukumba.
Like this year is really a drought. It was supposed to this area to be really pure green.
Pokea watu kutoka vijiji tofauti.
So they receive some people from other villages because here is even better and there is some water.
Kutoka Ngorongoro, kijiji cha Malambo, Sonjoni kule, tumewapokea sisi ndio tumewahifadhi katika kiangazi.
So there is people from the other village nearest called Malambo, from Maasai people. There is a village from Sonjo. Sonjo is another ethnic tribe just next to Malambo. But all they come to this village because of water and some grasses up the escarpment. But up the escarpment where there is grasses for cattle, there is no water. That's the challenge. So you will have water here, but you don't have enough grass. Especially when it is drought, when all livestock come around the lake and around this area. Yeah, I know your question about...
Why you don't plant the fruit trees which prefers the dry areas?
So they don't have education about that. They don't know about that. These are pastoralists. They depend on cattle and everything. So they don't know if which kind of fruits.
Yeah, jackfruit is a very good fruit. I think you know or may not. But which prefers the acidic soil and highland, and which does it prefer the standing water and grow very quickly, and then it's a permanent tree, perennial tree, which is a big fruit, which is our national fruit also in our country. But
ni kwamba anajua yeye, unajua sisi wa Masai wafugaji tunaomba Mungu mvua inyeshe tu kwa ajili ya mifugo, lakini kumbe hatujui kwamba kuna vitu vingine tunaweza tukafanya. Kwa hiyo ni elimu nyingine ambayo ni ngeni kwetu.
So he thankful. He says education, we will think about it and see how we can.
If you think about Thailand,
the group goes on to analyze the situation together and talk out solutions they found in their own countries. Next, they move on to a site that attracts tourists from around the world.
So, inside here is another important attraction in Nyangaresero. And inside here you will find the Nyangaresero human footprint, which is among the oldest human track in the world, and is assumed to have age of 120,000 years old. And this footprint was discovered 2006 by a local Maasai here in Nyangaresero. The name of the local Maasai who discovered this print is called Kongo Sakai. He was a security guard in the camp near there. So while he was heading cattle, he discovered the track and he reported to the one of the camp owner. And you'll see here inside, we'll get into there, many tracks of different age size. So the GIS project also had inputs on this. They also helped in promoting this footprint. So we will have a look and see how the tracks look like.
So the footprint, when was recognized, the GIS do one significant effort that the Kongo Sakai, who is an indigenous person who recognized this site, was reported by FAO that he is the owner of, you know, the person who recognized, and not the guy who owned the campsite. And that was the influence the government of Tanzania put effort, came here, and the GIS FAO gives some money, and then we recognize the person. And we try to use this place also to get more funds for tourists, and we can take some for community.
Funding is a challenge and is needed to keep these initiatives running. But funds and developing their local economy are not the only challenges for the Maasai.
People don't recognize the importance of intangible heritage.
That's Arpakwa Sirokea again. And as mentioned earlier, the focal point for the GS project in Nyangaresero.
The current challenge really is, for example, many people, decision makers, don't understand pastoral system. When pastoral people move from one place to another during the dry season or wet season, the people think that this is a bare land, that is an open land. They will give to investors, they will give to other kind of business, and when the livestock come back, they cannot complete their grazing cycle. You can see in Nyangaresero, there are some lodges who are located in an practical kind of way, so they just put around water sources, they just put around Lengnatron, and they take big size of lands. Those are the challenges.
Though some branches of government have been actively supporting the protection of this area as a heritage site for the Maasai, there are competing interests when it comes to economic expansion and this pastoralist system. Earlier in the podcast, we mentioned how organized efforts through CBOs aim to strengthen and empower the community, but they also help community members get support for things like sponsoring students to go to universities or secondary school, or generating funding at the district level to support hiring and training Maasai youth for tourism activities. Youth employment and youth engagement in their own culture has been a concerning issue for local leaders.
There are some education system whereby young generation are told in school that pastoral system is destructive to environment. And that is school system. That is really a challenge which was there, it is there, and it will continue to be there. The future challenge is when the elders now are passing away, they will die, who have this knowledge, who will really transform this knowledge from one generation to another. In Maasai, we still have a life heritage, a storytelling, but in the future, I'm scaring that if we cannot take reasonable measures as a nation, as community, as international agencies, this amazing heritage of the old might lose.
Agencies like Oxfam International have endorsed Maasai practices to promote what the Maasai also believe are natural systems of land management that are in harmony with the local wildlife and resources. But elevating those marginalized voices so that they can be a part of these conversations at a policy level can be difficult. Last April, I spoke with Pablo Manzano. At the time, he was the coordinator of something called the Pastoralist Knowledge Hub that had just launched at FAO headquarters in Rome. This online platform was built by FAO and its partners because they wanted to grow a network to help support pastoralists at the policy level. According to FAO, there are several hundred million pastoralists globally who manage the world's rangelands. But despite their importance to food production and ecosystems, however, the agricultural practices and livelihoods of these nomadic herders face a number of challenges beyond those specific to the Maasai tribes in East Africa. Mr. Manzano, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
How would you describe the contributions of pastoralists to agriculture globally?
The contribution of pastoralists to the global agriculture is pretty important, especially regarding the marginal lands. Pastoralists occupy the lands that are less productive and usually where crop production is not possible, like dry lands, like arid lands, mountains, and cold lands. Their strength is that they are able to produce food and high-quality food with a lot of protein like milk, like meat, and other products like fibers or like leather in places where you can actually plant anything because the rains are too unpredictable and the environmental conditions are too harsh. This is thanks to their capacity to be mobile and to chase the productivity peaks that occur in the different areas.
Could you identify a couple of examples in particular countries or regions where they're well known?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question because the stereotype of people towards pastoralists is normally like Maasai in Kenya. That's the people that have been more in the media, but there are pastoralists everywhere and even in developed countries. If you have a look at the stereotype of a cowboy in the United States, for example, they may not be calling themselves pastoralists, but they share with Maasai or with Tibetan pastoralists or with a lot of other pastoralist people's identity points. They have a degree of mobility in their livelihoods and occupy very often communal lands. And unfortunately, they very often are marginalized. They are marginalized socially because they are perceived as people with no culture or with low culture. They're perceived as people with low education, and they are not very influential in policy dialogue.
So the challenges are similar across the board for different types of pastoralists in different countries?
Yes, there are. And I mean, this is why it makes sense to work particularly with pastoralists and why it is worth developing a working agenda that is specific to this group of producers because of these challenges that they share across the board. It's true that there are some regional specificities. For example, in many places of the world, the lack of services is a major issue. Social services like finance provision or education is not adapted to the necessities of mobile people so that the members of pastoralist communities are faced with the decision whether they should send children to school or learn pastoralist culture, and this is a big challenge. However, in wealthiest countries, the problems tend to be more related to gender balance in pastoralist communities, given that they have been marginalized for so long and they have been left behind by the development of countries. For example, women have massively left the pastoralist communities and they have challenges in terms of losing specific products. For example, cheese that is very associated with the manufacturing of women. When the women leave these communities, they lose this culture. The communities lose this culture and they also lose opportunities for further economic improvement. Pastoralists have been largely neglected from policy dialogue, even if they are a very important part of the agricultural production in the world. And they are also providing very important ecosystem services that matter to the whole society, even for the people living in the cities. So it doesn't make sense anymore to exclude them from the dialogue. And if we leave them aside, then they will not be with us. And that's something that has to be tackled.
There are core issues that connect the millions of pastoralists worldwide. Issues that need to be heard and incorporated into action at the community level and at the policy level. When it comes to the Maasai, the intersection of age-old traditional customs with the realities of a modernizing world and a changing climate has presented a number of challenges, as we've heard in this podcast. By allowing their lands to be designated a globally important heritage site, the Maasai traditional leaders in Ngarasero continue to pursue common interests and hopefully find solutions to these challenges. Thank you for listening to another episode of Target Zero Hunger. If you have any questions or feedback, please write to us at fao-audio@fao.org. For more information about GS projects around the world, visit www.fao.org/giahs.